He was a morbidly obese surgeon destined for an operating table and an early death. Now he's a rebel MD who is fabulously fit and fighting to make America healthy again. This is Stay Off My Operating Table with Dr. Philip Ovadia.
Well, welcome back. It's the Stay Off My Operating Table podcast with Dr. Philip Ovadia. And Phil, today is one that I'm particularly excited about just because I'm a wrestling nerd. and we are few and far between. So I was really, we got to talk a little bit before we started recording. So I'm not going to steal anybody's thunder, but I'm particularly excited about our wrestling connection here. Introduce our guest.
Sounds good. Yeah, we got a great story to share today. Really excited to have Jeff Davis on with us. And Jeff's story, and I don't want to give it away either, but, you know, recovery from heart disease to become a championship wrestler. Really excited to, hear this and to share it with everyone. And with that, I'm just going to turn it over to Jeff to kind of introduce himself and maybe give us the story up until you have your heart attack, and then we'll go from there.
The story up until I had my heart attack. I'm a Florida boy, and we were just talking about that. I come from Gainesville, Florida, originally. Right now, I have a 20-acre farm just north of Napa that I'm at. I sold my financial planning business in Gainesville. I wrestled in high school in the state of Florida, won a couple state championships when I was a kid, went on to the University of Florida, where I was part of the University of Florida's wrestling program, which was from, when they dropped in 1979, Title IX athletics. It was the beginning of how they were trying to even the playing field for women's sports. And one of the ways they did that was most of the money goes in, you know, the way they have it, they do the calculations, football outweighs it. So you see a lot of the smaller sports. When I wrestled at the University of Florida, there was 170 schools in the Division I in wrestling. Today there's 85. So now it happened to baseball, it happened to swimming, it happened to a lot of other sports, but a lot of men's sports went away. And that's what happened in Gainesville. We were the SEC champions in 1975, undefeated in dual meets. That's one of my claims to fame. And from that, I stayed in Gainesville, got involved in financial planning business, became a certified financial planner, stayed involved in the sport, hosted a couple of national championships for USA Wrestling in the early 90s. And that gave me the opportunity to be on the training staff at the 96 Olympics. And so I spent 3 weeks up there in Atlanta, helping to put on the wrestling tournament and getting to spend a lot of time meeting the guys and helping them train. Coached the junior national team in the state of Florida. And in 2004, we won the national championship for high school kids and Greco-Roman wrestling. And then fast forward, I had a great financial planning career. Did everything I wanted to do in the financial planning business. And then April the 9th of 2015 came along and changed all my life.
So, here you are, athletic background. Sounds like you stayed pretty active in athletics, financial planning. Probably figured you were pretty healthy. And all of a sudden, on April 9th, 2015, you have a heart attack.
Let me go back a little bit then.
Yep. Talk about that.
I've got a couple decades of sobriety. And as part of that, you know, one of the things that happened is I looked for other forms of sugar. And in 2010, I got up to 280 pounds.
Okay.
I was chubby. No question about it. Now, I remember going to one of my friends who was and complaining about my back problems. He said, "It's not your back, it's your front." And so I started working on losing weight. I started training with a guy named Zach Sedalis, who was a well-known football player at the University. He's now an actor, a successful actor. But Zach helped me get in shape. And by April the 9th, I was down to 235 pounds. Now, 6 months before that, I had thought I was going to change my doctors because I was getting healthy. I'm really focused on getting all of the numbers right, doing everything I needed to be doing. I went to see this doctor. She was a good friend. And she turned out to be a good friend because she gave me some good advice that scared the hell out of me. My blood test came in and she threw it on the table and said, "You're a heart attack waiting to happen." Everything was red. So I went into, over the next few months, I did everything. I did the stress test, carotid artery tests. I did all of the tests necessary to, evaluate where I was in my cardiac journey. And basically the idea was, you're on the right track. We just need to tweak a few things. So this was January of 2015. I get finished with the tests and they tell me that that's we're on the right track. You're down to 235 from 280. You're getting in shape. You're eating better, blah, blah, blah. And then April the 9th of 2015 was my birthday. I turned 63. And thank God my sweetheart, who was living in Tampa at the time, was up to see me. We went out to dinner and came home, and my sons kind of teased me because, your legacy could have been you fooled around and died, Dad. About 10 o'clock that night, I'm laying there and I had a little pain on the top of my shoulder. Now, in the 1976 Olympic trials, I landed on the shoulder, blew it apart. So I've had pain on this side of my shoulder and chest all my life. And I just thought, I've pulled a muscle. I've done something. And my lab, who was my best friend, went everywhere with me. Her name was Madison. She came to the side of the bed and she was not going to let me lay there. And so I finally said, okay, you must have to go out. The door's open, but I'll get up and I'll walk you out to the back. And I'm working on my shoulders. And I walked about 10 yards. And what I've been told is the heart pumping again seated whatever was the clot that I had in my and blockage. And I felt like somebody had shot me. I mean, I went to my knees. We've got the 911 tape, and my girlfriend yelled out, "Are you okay?" "No. What's the matter?" "I think I might have a heart attack. I'm calling 911." And 911, "What's the emergency? Is he breathing?" "We're on our way." And I got to the couch, sat down on the couch. And I sat there, and as I found out, it was only 6 minutes. It sure seemed like hours because a lot of things went through my head as I'm evaluating, okay, well, this is what it's like to die. The good news at that point in my life, because of my business, I'm a certified financial planner. I had wills done. I had, there was, because of my life, there were no secrets in my past. Nobody's going to open up a closet and go, "He did what?" Everything was okay. There was plenty of insurance for my kids. And I remember just saying, putting it in the hands of God. And when I did that, I had this enormous peace and serenity that came over me. And I was okay if this was it. I remember thinking that, okay, I'm never going to be able to tell anybody what this journey's like, but I'm always been curious, what is it going to be like in those last few minutes on Earth? Does it go to a black light, go dark? Is my mom going to be waiting for me there, when I go to heaven? And, I'm an Italian kid, like Phil, I'm a mama's boy. So I wanted to know if my mom was going to be there when I got there. And then I heard a boom as the EMTs kicked in the front door, and these big old boys, they're not small, and they're coming through that And my dog was sitting there. She wasn't going to let anybody near me. One of those guys picked her up, threw open the back door, threw her out, closed the door. They start putting the things on me. And then I heard the term you never want to hear when you think you're having a heart attack, and they put those electrodes on you. I think we're having a STEMI event.
A what?
Ah, the doctor will explain that. A STEMI event.
Yeah. So what we call an ST elevation MI, myocardial infarction. So STEMI. And it means it's a bad one. Oh. People. Yep. Yeah, the background is there, you know, people think all heart attacks are the same, and they're not. And they have kind of the real bad emergency ones, which are the STEMIs, and then they have what we call the non-STEMIs, which are, you know, I'm not going to say they're not bad, but they're not as bad as Jeff was having the big one.
Well, they told me that, that, you know, looking back at it, 90 to 95% of the time, the kind of heart attack I was having, you don't survive. You don't get through the first 3 hours. And I was a mile from the best medical facility. I like to say the best medical facilities in the state of Florida, because I'm a Gator, but that's the University of Florida's medical school. So 2.5 hours after it started, I already had a stent in my heart. I don't remember a lot about things I know what happened from people telling me, but once the EMTs and those folks came in, and you know, probably too much information, but you know, one of the first things, I'm got a little white hair on my head. Yeah. Have you taken any Viagra? Yeah. Well, then you don't get this. You know, they can't give you any of the nitroglycerin if you've had any kind of ED type of ED drugs. So Cialis or Viagra, any of them. There, make sure you tell your, if anything happens to you, don't be embarrassed. You got to let them know, because you've already taken a vasodilator and your blood pressure could drop even more. I act like I know what I'm talking about, and I'm just parroting what I've been told over the years. But they started me on morphine. And so I have times when I could remember things that I know that one of the opportunities, if it happened where I live today, I live in rural Northern California in the mountains. I don't know that I could survive what happened to me. I don't know that they could get to me in time. It'd probably take them 15 or 20 minutes, at least, to even get to my farm. So I'm not easily accessible. And when I moved out here, I knew that. But they got me in that. And I remember them getting me through the house and into the ambulance. And my sweetheart, God bless her soul, She didn't want to go. She grabbed a pair of gym shorts and a t-shirt, which is she never wore, but that's what she grabbed because, you know, people are coming, and she's, I'm going to go change my clothes. I'll meet you at the hospital. And they looked at her and said, you don't have time, get in. And, I remember that. And I remember there's a rush. I was told that when we got there, because they had been communicating with the hospital from the time this event started, which I didn't know that they could do, but they were already getting instructions from the cardiology folks. I went straight to a hospital that the emergency room, I went into that emergency room and I was going right to a cath lab. So there was a team waiting for that to come in. Now, later on in my life, I've been in the hospital before, and I've heard code red STEMI event, and everybody leaves. They left me, and everybody was rushing to make sure that they could meet this. And that's what happened to me. They were ready for me. I know that she sat in the corner, and I thought back as we were preparing for this conversation. I really probably have never given her enough credit, because the impact of everything that was happening that night, I've always been thinking about myself. But just to have been a partner watching that happen, into the ambulance, don't have time, into the emergency room, and people working on me, and I'm unconscious. I remember waking up and somebody asking me a face over my neck that said, you know, are you in pain? Yeah, I'm in a little bit of pain. And next thing you know, I'm unconscious again. They woke us up just before they took me into the cath lab for her to talk to me. And they had told her, you know, this is really, really serious. You know, we don't know what we're going to find. Don't know what's going to happen, but this is what we think. but be prepared. I went into the cath lab, and the only thing I remember is it was cold. And so I remember it being really cold. And I remember all of a sudden a flushing, this heat just, and apparently, as I understood it, as I said, what was that? I woke up, what was that? And that was, we're taking out your blockage. And I understand that when that happens, it's, you know, a flushing event happens and you get this real heat. And I said, well, just, you know, he said, you did a really good job of it. That's 100% blockage. I said, just tell me it wasn't the Widowmaker. Oh, it was the Widowmaker. And that, I don't remember much until I got back up into recovery, a couple of hours of recovery. And then I remember waking up in the recovery room and saying, gosh, I feel good. You know, I probably got some meetings this morning. I probably can make those meetings. You know, I didn't know it was going to be 9 months before I could really go back to work. It was just devastating, the whole situation after and trying to get back on my feet. And I know that's what we want to talk about also. I'm not sure where we're at in my conversation and whether you want me to go ahead and finish this part of it. You want me to go ahead, Phil?
Well, let's actually pause there for a minute. You know, okay. We've been doing this show for, 2.5 years now, Jack? We're 140 episodes in. I'm a heart surgeon, and we've actually never really talked much about what happens during a heart attack what some of the things that Jeff experienced are. And one of the things I think would be good to mention is we do talk a lot on this program about how the medical system fails. But this is a situation where I think our medical system is really tops. You know, when you have an acute problem, when you're having that heart attack, our system, our healthcare system is really designed to fix that problem. And so just like you said, you know, the ambulances are in communication with the emergency rooms. They give the heads up. We got a STEMI coming in. The cath lab, you know, staff, if they weren't already in the hospital, they were called into the hospital. And one of the quality metrics that hospitals get graded on is what's called door to balloon time. And what it means is when someone is coming in with a STEMI like Jeff, how long is it from when they hit the door of the emergency room to they have a balloon inserted to open up that blocked blood vessel like Jeff had? And so, you know, all of that worked right. And that's why Jeff is with us today, because it sounds like, kind of what I guessed when you were telling your story, that you had 100% blockage, a complete occlusion of what we call the Widowmaker, which is the left anterior descending artery, the main artery that runs down the front of our heart. That supplies blood flow to about, 60% of our heart muscle. So 60% of your heart muscle was getting zero blood flow, essentially. And if that goes on, for any period of time, you're not around to tell the story. So, I think that's interesting, interesting for people to hear and know, because, I think there are a lot of misconceptions about what a heart attack actually is. And people may not understand that there are certainly different types of heart attack, and you had the bad one, and you are in the minority of people that survive that. So that in and of itself is an amazing story. And if it ended there, it would be an amazing story, but it doesn't end there. I do just want to go before we get to what happened after the heart attack, understand a little bit more about, because like you said, you had a full evaluation, it sounds like, with a cardiologist a few months before this. And they basically said, okay, some of your blood numbers look bad, but we think you're okay. And then, here you are having a heart attack a few months later. Do you remember, did they do what's called a coronary artery calcium scan?
They did.
Okay.
They
and
did.
How did that look?
What
did they tell you?
They told me that it wasn't. And they did also a scan of the carotid artery, and they told me I didn't have that bad. At that point, they didn't think I had that bad of a blockages, or that my numbers, they had actually improved from September until January. So I had been on a path. It was red, and everything was negative, or I guess positive is actually what you would say, right? I mean, yeah. I just rang every bell on that first test in September. I was January.
Yeah. So that sounds like they're talking about your lipids, your cholesterol levels.
Every one of them.
And those improved. And yet you got worse, you know, which is why I often talk about that cholesterol isn't really the whole story. It's just a small part of it. Yeah, you know, some interesting stuff. Okay. You have the heart attack, you get your stent, you get out of the hospital, talk a little bit about, you know, what your thoughts were then, what you were experiencing, and, what the kind of road to recovery looked like.
Initially, I couldn't believe that it had happened to me. That was probably my just trying to get your head wrapped around because I hadn't had a lot of folks, they have these heart attacks that seem to be, you know, they drive themselves to the hospital. I hear about that, you know, they've been walking around for a week or two before they finally go to a doctor. That wasn't my experience at all. My experience was acute. Boom. I was down on my knees, and it happened like I'd been shot. So why did that happen? And how do I make sure this isn't going to happen again? Well, I'm going to do everything they're going to tell me. I'm a guy that did not want to take any medication. I still don't like taking it. And I take as little as I can. But I took everything. And all of a sudden, I went from, you know, one medication to 10 or 12 medications. I mean, they just, you know, all the blood thinners and ACE inhibitors and blah, blah, blah. You know, you can discuss this a whole lot more than I can, but I just know that all of a sudden I went to that, and I found myself sleeping all the time, and I was scared. If I do too much, is this going to happen again? Laughingly, I look back and, you know, one of the first questions I remember my girlfriend asking them was, will we ever be able to have sex again? As soon as you can walk up two flights of stairs, that was the nurse told her. And so, you know, I say, okay, well, life is, you know, there is an opportunity to get healthier. What do I need to do? And then they introduced me to cardiac rehab. Now, I just didn't have any strength. I was tired all the time, you know, and I think some of that came from the drugs I was taking. You know, everything was, you know, my heart wasn't beating as hard. It was healing. You know, I've got 9 years of experience, and I've been following, you know, I read everything I'm one of your Twitter fanboys, or I guess it's X fanboys. And so I read all of the things, and I read, you know, and you and I are on the same page. I mean, you reinforce everything that I think about all of the things that I have experienced. It was 9 months before I went back to my office. And when I went back, I was having a reaction to Crestor. Specifically, that was the statin drug I had been taking. And I was in so much pain, I could hardly get out of a chair. You know, with the other things that were going on, that was when I decided, you know, I need to sell my business, you know, you have multiples of revenues. And I wanted the highest revenue I could for my family. And so I made the decision, you know, I didn't think that I had a long life ahead of me at that point. And so I wanted to capture what I could for my family. And then they took me off Crestor. The pain went away within days. So my experience, one that some people have with statin drugs, they get the statin drugs and they're going to have a pain in their connective tissues. And that's what I had. And it evolved into polymyalgia rheumatica. So,
into what? Sorry.
PMR.
Yeah, PMR, polymyalgia rheumatica.
Explain, please.
Yeah, so this is a condition basically where you essentially you just get chronic diffuse pain, like pain everywhere. And, you know, the medical system kind of throws their hands up, you know, and says, we don't really know what's going on here. So, you know, oftentimes this will be there are other names for similar things like complex regional pain syndrome and fibromyalgia. You know, they're all kind of in the same family. But polymyalgia rheumatica is supposed to be an autoimmune condition. But it turns out that medications like statins can induce something that's very similar and oftentimes kind of gets mislabeled as the autoimmune condition when it's actually a drug effect, a side effect from the medication.
And, wow. And you know, my friends who were, you know, I had a lot of clients who were physicians, so everybody was checking on me. And so if I had a question, I knew I had plenty of people to ask. And what are we going to do about? Well, there's nothing you do that you got to get into the rheumatologist. No test. No, they're not going to give me any drugs. And so I get to the rheumatologist. It was in, you know, probably 4 to 6 weeks later, you know, and, you know, he said, well, we're going to put you on prednisone. And they said, you know, I said, well, they told me they weren't going to, they couldn't give me prednisone until you gave me a test. He said, that is the test. If I give you prednisone and you get better, you know, the pain goes away, then that's what we've got is PMR. If it doesn't, then I've got to go start looking at lupus. I got to look at this. I've got to look at, you know, all the autoimmune issues. And I immediately got better. Today I don't really have any other problems with it. I know that it lingers, but I haven't had any problems. And, but that was, you know, that became the big issue. That, and I had a lot of problems with, you know, because of the blood thinners, I was getting bloody noses all the time. Another side effect of some of these drugs that we had to take. And I couldn't keep weight on. I dropped from probably 235 down to the, you know, 210, 215. About a year after the heart attack, I still couldn't walk 100 yards, without stopping and having to rest. I mean, I was, you know, I didn't think that I had much of a future. And then I met, a doctor, by the name of Preston Green up in Gainesville, who sat me down, and he doesn't do, surgery anymore, but we spent an hour talking about what I was eating. What I was doing. And I see that big book behind your head there, ketogenic. He took me and put me on a low carb keto like diet. I did eat a lot of protein and crushed the sugars. What, you know, sugar, get it out of your, you know, don't take any, no more of this, no more of this, no more, you know, I'm a sugar addict. I love sugar. And he took all that, as much of the sugar out of my life as he could. And I started to feel better. By November of 2016, so we're talking about 20 months after the heart attack, he was an All-American wrestler up at UT Chattanooga, turned over our little wrestling club up in Gainesville to him. And John said, you know, the kids just want to know if you're alive, Dad. I said, okay, just come and walk around so people see you. Because everybody's, you know, worried that you're dying on us. I walked in and I got ambushed. You know, when the practice was over, he grabbed me. Okay, let's do a little of this, you know. So we spent about 15 seconds pushing on each other and I was done. But it was exciting to smell the Resolite. Yeah. So I'm the NCAA wrestling tournament's going on right now. So I'm glued to my TV for the next 2 days watching wrestling. I love the smell of Resolite in the morning. And so I came back on Thursday and, you know, we pushed a little bit. December rolls around for Christmas. And, my two sons are both All-American wrestlers. They handed me an airplane ticket and said, Dad, to Las Vegas. The U.S. Open's in April. Here's the airplane ticket. here's your entry fee, and we've already got you registered for the and got your USA wrestling card. Get ready to wrestle. And that became, you know, with the combination of diet and exercise, I started this process. I went to the first tournament in April of 2017. And, you know, I had a pretty successful college career, and I looked and I didn't recognize any names in the weight class of people that were around. So, you know, and I watched a few videos and said, you know, I could do this. I could beat those guys. I got a minute in me. I'll beat them in a minute. Well, the first day is Greco-Roman, and I wrestled my first match, and I'd be glad to, at some point I'll share it with you, Jack, the video of it, because it's a minute into it, I'm purple. And I, that was, you know, that's it. I'm done. I can't wrestle anymore. I can't breathe. You know, I stumble off the mat into a corner, and everybody's surrounding me thinking I'm about to have another heart attack. I didn't feel like that. I couldn't breathe. I was purple. And the second match.
Now, real quick, what weight class are you at this point?
I was wrestling 211 and a half pounds. Okay.
All right.
So,
you dropped what, close to 70 pounds?
Yeah, at that point. Now, but I was running around 220 after I started the diet that I had been put on back, you know, almost a year ahead. So I was feeling better. I was feeling much better. I was healthier. I was a little heavier. And so I cut down to 211 and a half for that tournament.
And if you don't mind me asking, how much medication are you still on at that point?
Almost none.
Okay.
Almost none. I think that I had one, and I'm going to abuse it. It's HTZ or HZT.
HZTZ. Yeah. Hydrochlorothiazide. So
that
blood
was
pressure
the
medication. Yeah.
That was what I was taking, and no, I was off of all, I wasn't taking any more blood thinners. They had taken, I think it was metoprolol.
Mm-hmm.
That had been keeping me from getting my heart up, my heartbeat up. So they'd taken me off of that so that I was virtually on, I'd gone from 10, 12 to 1 in about 10 months.
So with the dietary changes.
Yes, sir. The diet. And I start with diet. It's diet, then it's exercise. Diet, exercise, prayer, and meditation are the keys to what I think of as the success that changed my life. Nobody wanted me to come back for freestyle the next day, but I was determined. You know, I hadn't been on the mat since 1976. I knew just walking out there to compete, the adrenaline dump the first day and all of that was behind me. I had to wrestle. I got to wrestle a guy who was a world champion in my first match. And I knew I had a minute and a half of wrestling in me. And he walked into a headlock and another move. And I teched him 11 to nothing in about a minute and 20 seconds. And I said, you know what? I can do this. That was fun. That was,
okay. I feel like you left out something important, and you were obviously doing something between the last time you were an NCAA wrestler and you got out on the mat. You don't walk into a world champion and tech him by 11 points with laying off for 40 years.
Well, I'd been on the mat coaching kids.
Okay. All right.
I'm wrestling little kids all my life, you know?
Okay.
And we had a rule in our house. Both of my sons ended up being 189 pound state champions. You know, as soon as they scored points on me, it became a fist fight. And so, you know, when they'd attack me, you know, from anywhere, you know, walking down the hall, all of a sudden somebody's got you, pulled you, blah, 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 and we're fighting, you know. So I was battling with those guys.
Okay, so you had two state champions that you were regularly keeping your chops refined with.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. It makes more sense now. Please continue the story.
Well, in between that part, Jack, you know, I went into the University of Florida's Athletic Hall of Fame. I'm the only wrestler. I'm what they call a Gator Great. So, you know, I had a pretty good career, and I went into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame in 2004. So, you know, I have a background in the sport, and I stayed You know, I stayed at the edge of the mat, but I was actually wrestling, and we've got videos of it. But, you know, I started wrestling 2 or 3 days a week with my older son, who was an All-American at 184 pounds. And now he was 210 pounds. And he would he just gave me a beating, but he coached me up. And I really wasn't that good. I knew a couple of moves, and I caught this guy in those moves. I, you know, just to be honest, hurt my knee in the finals, but I had such a good time. I said, you know, this is the way I'm going to get healthy again, because I feel better than I've felt in years. 2018 of April, I went back and I wrestled again. Didn't win. I won some matches, placed, but didn't win the tournament. December of 2018, so we're 3.5 years after the heart attack now, I went to my first world championships, and I won a world championship in Greco-Roman, and I won a silver medal in freestyle. 2019, I was on the USA team. I went to Warsaw, Poland, and I won the world championship in freestyle and in Greco-Roman. 2020, there was no wrestling. 2021, we came back again, and I had to the guy who was the world champion at the age group below me had moved up. He hadn't lost to an American in 15 years, so he knew that he was going to beat me. And interestingly enough, you remember that I told you about the first match in Turning Purple? It was against that. Well, I wrestled that same guy all these years later. And I beat him in the finals and won my last world championship in freestyle wrestling in 2021. So I won 4 world championships, 2 in Greco-Roman, 2 in freestyle. Amazing. For an old man.
Yeah. I told my man that had a heart attack too, you know, which I think is, it's very, very impressive, obviously. So I do want to go back, cause we glanced over it a little bit, but you have your heart attack, you're following the advice that your doctors give you. Like you said, you know, you were willing to do whatever it took to get better, and you're following the advice that your doctors are giving you. And, you know, you're alive, but it sounded like you weren't really getting better. And it was only when you came across this other doctor who, you know, started talking to you about what you ate, changed your diet that you really recovered.
Absolutely. You know, the conversation started out about sourcing my food, which I thought was one of the most interesting conversations, and one that I have with people all the time. He said, you know, my grandfather ate fried chicken. You know, we're Southerners. He ate fried chicken and potatoes and salad and he was working in the fields until he was in his 80s. And you know what the difference was, Jeff? The chicken ran around outside the house. The lettuce came from Mrs. Jones's garden down the road. The potatoes came from over here. You know, you didn't get them from the grocery store. They've been sprayed with this. They've been given this. The quality of the food, just the sourcing of the food, was, I think, an important change, in addition to the fact that I really focused on, you know, on eating more, a lot of raw fruits and vegetables. I went to eating a lot of fish. I haven't eaten red meat since 1976, which I think probably helped in all of this to survive. But I eating good fish, especially salmon, and eating good, healthy chicken. But again, small, maybe 4 to 6 ounces of protein was all I was eating. I wasn't eating a lot. Everything else was going to be what I could put in that big salad of mine, you know, carrots. I wanted as much color as I could put in there. I wanted to eat an avocado or two every day. And those are the kind of things that I wanted to try and do in terms of my diet. And, you know, cutting back on the sugar. I ate a lot of eggs, but sugar was a big thing for me because I was such a sugar addict. All of a sudden, you know, I haven't had an Oreo cookie. I used to be able to eat half a bag of Oreo cookies all by myself with a big glass of milk. You know, and now tell you the last one I had. Krispy Kreme donuts is a big thing in Gainesville, Florida. And boy, that hot donuts sign came on there. I had an app on my phone that told me when the app, when that was going to be. And, you know, I'd head down for, you know, a dozen for the family and a dozen hot glaze that I could eat, you know, on the way home, because they were just, you pop them in your mouth and they were gone. I haven't had, you know, donuts or something that's I've taken out of my, I've done all the things I can to reduce the sugar. My girlfriend made a pie the other day and, you know, it was all fruit, very little, you know, I got to put a little bit of sugar. Don't put much sugar in it. You know, okay. You know, it may not be as sweet. And I don't like, my sweet tooth is gone in the sense that if I try anything, I can tell if it's got a lot of sugar. Whoa, boy, is that sweet. I mean, it feels like my body tingles from the sugar. So, you know, the change in diet was absolutely essential for me. I started drinking a lot more water. So I don't drink the gallon, but I try to drink a half a gallon of water every day. And I tried to make sure I pounded that down. And then I was using, all through, my friend Michael Lang, who we talked a little bit before, gave me some supplements, pre-workout and protein that I used during my whole wrestling career, and I still use to this day. I train 4 days a week. I don't think of it as working out. You know, people say you can work out and get healthy in 20 minutes. It's training to me. It's going to be training till the day I die. I'm going to spend an hour and 30 minutes of cardio and 30 minutes of. I'm 72 now. I absolutely believe that you could pick things up. And all of this, you know, it, considering what happened to me at 63. I had a friend who does studies of biology, looked at the numbers. What is your biological age versus your chronological age? My biological age came out to 53.
There you go. So,
I like to say that I reversed heart disease, because I've tracked every one of those, but I know that as a cardiologist, I got a stent in my heart. I can't get that out. You can't reverse that happening. But I know that all those lipid numbers that you were talking about are coming out green now. I try to make sure that I do that every 3 to 6 months at a minimum. I'm getting those blood tests and I keep them. I look at them. It's to me a study that is important to evaluating what kind of health I'm in. And because I have a goal of inspiring and motivating people over 60 to be able to live, my goal is to live to 100. And how do I do that? One of the things that we talked about, Howard talked about, and I just popped in my brain, is this whole concept of biohacking, which is something that I've been really hacking into your biology. And if you're taking a vitamin, you're biohacking. You're doing things that are going to help you live longer. And it's not just about, you know, the lifespan, it's the health span. I want to live. And then Phil probably has heard this before, because my grandmother used to, somebody would die over in their sleep. It was the kiss of the angels. That's an Italian saying. That's the way if I would have died the night that I had this heart attack, that's what I hope. It just comes to an end. Boom, we're done. I want to have a healthy life right up until. So how do I do that? I do it through diet. I do it through exercise. I do it through prayer. I do it through meditation. What we call the great life adventure. That's what we call this whole thing.
Exactly. You know, and the phrase that I like best is, I want to die young as late as possible, right?
Oh, what a great one. That's
yeah, not mine. I can't remember where I heard that, but that's the best way I think I've heard it described. When you went and met with this other doctor who, you know, yes, got you off of sugar, basically put you on a low carbohydrate diet, what, if you can kind of remember, you know, what were your thoughts then? Because here you are, you know, you had the heart attack, you're, meeting with all these cardiologists who I'm sure all they were telling you was, you know, avoid cholesterol, low fat.
We're going to crush it.
Yep. Low fat, low salt. And then here's this guy saying, you know, basically, you know, we want you to eat a high fat, low carbohydrate, low sugar diet. What were your thoughts when you're kind of hearing that from him?
Mm-hmm. Well, I bought into it right away because it made sense to me. The way he approached it from the sourcing of food made me say, okay, well, that makes sense. Maybe this makes sense. And this isn't getting anywhere. I don't want to keep taking all these drugs. There's side effects to every drug that you're putting in your body. So the fewer drugs that I can put in my body, the better off I'm going to be. That's my belief. It's still my belief. I know that, I do take an aspirin. That was my concession to my cardiologist that I would keep taking an aspirin, keep my as a blood thinner. But one of the things that I do, you may have heard of this concept, bulletproofing your coffee. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't heard of it, it's, you're shaking your head, you know, and it's, to me, it's delicious. I put in butter, I put in coconut oil, and you mix that up and it's, you know, the good oils are coming in. I don't put sugar in it anymore. You know, that's, you know, I'll put in a little bit of honey just as a concession to, you know, making it a little tastier for me. But that's how I start every day. And those are fats. I can remember my mother, God bless her soul, swapping lard for Crisco back in the day. Yep. And then thinking she was an RN and she was a good Italian mama, I tell you. And then it was butter went away and we were going to eat margarine. You know, she did the best she could, but to me, both of those are poison. I put butter on things and people say, well, you're putting butter on that. Yeah. It's a potato. I like a little butter on my potato, but you've had a heart attack. No, you have to understand, you know, grass-fed cows making this butter from them. This is the best. This is the more of this I put in my life, the better off I feel. Now, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but you know, one of the things you asked me earlier was that first tournament that I wrestled at 211 pounds. Yeah. I kept working out. I kept training. I won all my world championships at 193 and a half,
wow,
88 kilos. Today, wow, this morning, I weighed 192.7. I'm still on the scale every day.
Wow.
I don't put on weight because of what I eat. You know, I eat, you know, if you can eat as many vegetables as you want, you could, and I believe that you can eat an awful lot of fruit and you're not going to put on weight. I don't. And I've got more energy than people that are around me. I mean, I feel bad for these people that are in their 60s and they can't get out of their chairs. They don't want, I can't go and do that. You know, the can'ts, forget about the can'ts. We've got to be able to do anything. You know, you've got to lift weights. You got to pick up heavy things and move them from one side to the other for the rest of your life so you don't become fragile. You know, how many people fall down and break things? How many people who are in their 70s can't get out of a chair unless they push themselves out of a chair? It's one of the things that I do when people ask me to, you know, about if I'm talking to a group, one of the things I'm going to have them do is have everybody stand up. And can you just touch your butt to the chair and stand back up? You know, about half of the people can, and a lot of younger people, they can't, their butt hits that, they're in the chair and then they got to work themselves back up. If you fall to the floor, can you put your hands over your head and get up off the ground without using your hands? If you can't, you need to learn how to do that. You need to do exercises and practice because all of us fall. We trip over something and, you know, we're going to the bathroom and all of a sudden we trip over a hair on the rug and can you get back up? if you can't and you're 75, 80 years old, hopefully somebody's there to be able to help you get up. Otherwise, you're going to end up on the floor all night waiting for somebody to come and help you. We've got to be independent I'm preaching here. But you've got to be independent enough that you can get up and take care of yourself. You got to be able to reach above your head and be able to put a can of soup on the can of something on the shelf, or be able to take it off of the shelf. You know, these are the kind of things that I see people who are older not being able to do. And they're taking 18 drugs. You know, I'm taking 9 drugs. I'm taking this. Why are you taking all of that? I guess there's going to be things that are absolutely necessary, but if it's not absolutely necessary, I'm one of those people that thinks that the pharmaceutical industry, look at the cardiac drugs. I'm talking to the cardiologist. You look at the cardiology drugs. You know, all the statins and all the drugs that they've given people for generations, have cardiac deaths gone down? No. These people, how am I doing? They haven't gone down.
Still number one.
Yes. So if those drugs worked, it wouldn't be. The stay off of your table, the stories you tell in that book. I read the book. You know, I went, yep. Yep. Oh, there's another one. He didn't know me before he wrote this book. Otherwise, I'd be in there too. But you are spot on with the things that you're telling people from my perspective. And I can only tell you that I've treated myself as a small experiment. I've experimented with all of these things. I've experimented with the drugs. I've gone to cardiac rehab and it didn't work for me until I went on a low carb keto type of a diet. The diet changed everything, from the diet, eating healthy fats, eating a lot more fruits and vegetables, small amount of protein, good healthy protein. I'm not eating, things that have got antibiotics in them or any of those other things. All of those things that are helping me to get healthier. I look at where I've got more energy today than I remember having, and I don't run out of energy. I got great sleep pattern. Now I track everything. I'm one of these. I've become a geek. I've got an Aura ring. I've got a Fitbit. I've got other apps that I use, and I'm looking at everything every day. You know, my girlfriend thinks I'm a little bit insane, but it's I love to see these numbers. I want to see how I slept. I want to go to bed on a routine. I want to go to bed, get up at 6:30 every morning. I want to go to bed by 9:00. I want a good night's sleep. I think it's another essential piece that we don't spend enough time talking about, is getting in there and getting that good, healthy rest. How am I doing? I'm sorry you got me wound up.
You know, it's really cool because our typical guest is a professional with deep expertise in some of the technical parts of being metabolically healthy. It's rare that we have somebody on who's kind of on the other side of the table. The folks, just the layperson who's mm-hmm. who's experienced the bad side and has come over to the side of health. And we had an 18-year-old on the show a couple of months ago, and she didn't say anything new. She didn't say anything that we haven't heard, but the fact that it was an 18-year-old who'd been doing the research and talking to her friends and realized what was really going on, it actually carried far more impact than the research scientists we've had on who've actually done the original research. And I was just thinking, this has so much more power because of what happened to you in 2015.
Yeah. It's the way I feel about it, Jack.
A national champion college athlete who ends up, just because you happen to be a mile from the hospital, not dead from a massive heart attack.
Right.
Talking about the same things that we talk about over and over again on this show. But it hits differently. It lands differently when it's not a medical professional. Yeah.
There's a movement about metabolic health. I feel like, and maybe it's because I read, and I catch these things, but I'm hearing more and more professionals starting to say the same things that Phil talks about. it's, you know, I think he's a pioneer in talking about these things. He's cutting cutting a swath, and I imagine that there's more than one other professional that has criticism over the things that he says and things he does. But there's I'm seeing a growing body of knowledge about metabolic health and the recognition that metabolic health is one of the most absolutely essential parts of this whole process. And we can reduce cardiac. I believe we can reduce the whole cardiac industry if we can focus more on metabolic health. But there's not a lot of money in salads. Sorry.
Comment, Phil.
That sums it up pretty darn well. From my perspective, I am encouraged because I do think this is being paid attention to more. It's really been a patient first experience because the vast majority of the doctors who are into metabolic health that I now talk to, one of two things happened. Either they had their own health problems that weren't being addressed by, you know, their traditional education, and they came across this, or they had a patient like you who, you know, wasn't being benefited, did their own research, changed to this, to metabolic health, got amazing results. And, you know, the doctor was open enough to learn from that. Now, the unfortunate thing I see is a lot of doctors aren't open to that. And someone like Jeff will go to them and say, you know, I've gotten all of this improvement from doing this, and the doctor will either just shrug it off as, you know, a one-off and not really think about it, or will say, well, you know, that still has to be killing you because it's going against our traditional advice. And I'm sure you've probably encountered that somewhat, but
more and more
it's getting accepted, I think.
I fired the cardiologist that I met up here. I need a cardiologist, you know, because if something happens. Well, I had our first conversation, and we're telling him what's happened. Well, no. You know, there's no such thing as healthy fats and no healthy oils. I said, whoa, wait a minute. We've got a problem right now.
And what we have here is a failure to communicate.
Oh boy. It was his answer for everything was, here's another drug. No, I'm not going to start taking. I haven't been taking them. Why am I going to take them? My cholesterol is not high. My triglycerides were just a little bit higher than they should have been. But, you know, that's my own fault. I believe that that's because I eat more sugar than I probably should. I'm a recalcitrant sugar eater. You know, the addict in me came out on that one. But, I believe I'm watching it. I've got more energy. I'm looking at this guy who's 6 years younger than me, and you're not into the kind of shape that I am. Why am I taking advice from you? You need to take some advice from me because this is what happened. Well, you know, you can't do that. So Phil's absolutely right. And being a professional, it must be even harder for him to colleagues. Not all of his colleagues are on board with metabolic health. And here's the other part of metabolic health. If I die today, the quality of my life has been so much better that we're not all going to live forever. One of my best friends passed away from prostate cancer a couple of days ago. Health had been a healthy man up until the time this happened, worked out, an incredibly spiritual man. I'm going to miss him, but we're all going to die and I'm going to die. So how do I live, be as young as I can, as long as I can, and die at the end of a cliff? And I'm going to have a better chance the way I'm living today than the way I was living.
Very well said.
Sorry. You got me all wound up. I got the lectures. No,
we can't really say it any better than that.
Can't say it any better.
Yeah. Give people, if they want to, which I'm sure they're going to want to, find out what you're doing, follow you, talk to you, give, let them know how they can do that.
Well, I follow you on X, and you can find me at Jeff 88 kg, 88 kilos. And in on July the 1st, we're premiering, we're creating a YouTube channel. And the first one is kind of a little bit of this story, you know, what happened. And I want to talk about what happened, what I did to get healthy, and what I do now to be able to try and live to 100. It's called Jeff Davis GLA. And that stands for the Great Life Adventure. That's what I call my, this adventure that I've been on over the last almost 10 years now. And the goal of the Great Life Adventure is to inspire and motivate a million people in the next 10 years to embrace healthier lifestyles and longevity through diet, exercise, prayer, and meditation. That's my goal. I think that's why I lived. It's taken me a while to get out here and focus on doing that for the rest of my life. But that's what I'm going to spend most of my time doing, is trying to inspire and motivate people through podcasts like this, things that I do on my own, either through, and you can also find me on Facebook at Jeff167. Jack, it's interesting. You know, you're going to find a lot of, anytime you see a Jeff167, Jeff118, Jeff145, those are probably wrestlers, and they're, yep, and we're taking our weight classes on the back of them. So I was 157 pounder in college. So it's Jeff167 on Facebook. And I post videos a couple of times a week talking about how to live to 100.
I loved it, Phil.
Another this great is real, one.
This is, yeah, this has been good. All right. Well, I'll just remind our audience that we always post these contacts in the show notes. So don't wreck the car while you're trying to write it down. It's right there in the show notes. Jeff Davis, thanks for being with us today. Great story. And we look forward to learning more about the Great Life Adventure.
Thank you, guys. I'll be in touch. And I appreciate everything you've done to try and promote metabolic health. It's the difference maker in cardiac life.
We believe it is.
All right.
For Dr. Philip Ovadia, for Jeff Davis, this has been the Stay Off My Operating Table podcast. We'll talk to you next time.
Chances are you wouldn't be listening to this podcast if you didn't need to change your life and get healthier. So take action right now. Book a call with Dr. Ovadia's team. One small step in the right direction is all it takes to get started. Contact us at ifixhearts.com/talk. That's ifixhearts.com/talk.